Turn to Daniel, the book of Daniel, chapter 9. And we're going to hit the pause button on the study of the Revelation. Last week we began our look at chapter 6 and the opening of the seals of the scroll, which is the title deed of the earth. And what we saw last time in Revelation chapter 6 was these seals that were opened brought about the events of the first half of the tribulation period. The first seal was false peace. The second seal was war. The third was famine. And the fourth was death. And those coincide with the events of the first 3.5 years of the tribulation period. And it's impossible to really understand the book of the Revelation apart from the book of Daniel. It is also impossible to understand the book of Daniel apart from the book of the Revelation. And we really should, and maybe we will, after we finish the study of the Revelation, maybe we should come back and look at in detail at the book of Daniel. Because that's one of the challenges that I've had this week, is trying to pull this little section out of Daniel and teach it apart from the context. But in chapters 20 through 27 of Daniel chapter 9 are the most amazing and complex and detailed and far-reaching prophecy given in Scripture. It's a prophecy so miraculous that Sir Isaac Newton said, "We could stake the truth of Christianity on this one prophecy alone." And I'm inclined to agree with what he says. Just to tell you what has, you know the background of, hopefully you know the background of Daniel. We studied enough through the history, through the Old Testament in years past, to know what's going on with the northern kingdom and the southern kingdom. The northern king carried away into Assyrian captivity. And the southern kingdom, starting in 605 BC, was carried away into Babylonian captivity by Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel was taken away in the first of those deportations. There were a series of 3 deportations of the people of Israel into Babylonian captivity. He stands firm. The whole first of the book of Daniel talks about how firm he is standing in his commitment to his God. And the stature of his character it's just prominent in the first part of the book. By the time we reach chapter 9, the time is about 537 BC. He's an old man now. He's been in captivity in the Babylonian kingdom for a long time. In fact, so long that it's no longer the Babylonian kingdom. It is the Medo-Persian kings, because the Babylonians were defeated by the Medo-Persians. He's outlived the Babylonian Empire. He's in the Medo-Persian Empire. It's being ruled by a man named Cyrus, who is also known as Darius. And the beginning of chapter 9 tells us that these things are happening in the first year of Darius, the son of Ahasuerus, of Median descent, who was made king over the kingdom of the Chaldeans. And it's in the first year of his reign that Daniel observed in the books the number of years which was revealed to Jeremiah for the completion of the desolation of Jerusalem. Here's what he figures out. Jeremiah said, it's going to be 70 years. We came when I was young, now I'm old. The time for the completion of this stuff should be just about over. So Daniel begins throughout chapter 9 to pray. He's praying and confessing the sins of his people and crying, pouring his heart out to God to say, okay, God, do what you said. I'd like to see you do what you said you were going to do. Take us back. Let's restore the city. Let's restore the temple. Let's get the people, your people, back to where they belong, worshiping you in your place, in your city. And depending, so because he understood from Jeremiah's prophet that it was going to be 70 years of captivity. And there were, as I said, there were three deportations. Depending upon which of those deportations you start counting, the 70 years should already be about over. But But Daniel's pouring his heart out because he knew it was God that the people should be, it's about time for the people to go back. So let's pick up reading in verse 20 of chapter 9. It says, now while I was speaking and praying and confessing my sin and the sin of my people Israel and presenting my supplication before the Lord my God in behalf of the holy mountain of my God, which is in Jerusalem, while I was still speaking in prayer, then the man Gabriel, and he's called a man, but he is an angel of God who appears as a man. He'd already appeared to him, I think, back in chapter 7. So he recognized who because, and that's what it said, whom I had seen in the vision previously. He came to me in my extreme weakness about the time of the evening offering. And he gave me instruction and talked with me and said, O Daniel, I have now come forth to give you insight with understanding. At the beginning of your supplication, when you first started praying, the command was issued. This is the command of God to Gabriel. And I have come to tell you, for you are highly esteemed. Great compliment. How would you like to have the testimony of an angel of God about who you are in the sight of God? You're greatly loved, highly valued. So he says, so give heed to the message and gain understanding of the vision. And from verse 24 to 27, God speaks profoundly. And here's what he says. Let's just read it and then we'll come back and walk through it. 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city to finish the transgression. You'll notice here there are six things that are going to happen. To finish the transgression. Number two, to make an end of sin. Number three, to make atonement for iniquity. Number four, to bring in everlasting righteousness. Number five, to seal up vision and prophecy. And number six, to anoint the most holy place. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince, a definite incident at the beginning and a definite incident at the end, there will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. And it will be built again with plaza and moat, even in times of distress. Then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off and have nothing. And the people of the prince who is to come, different prince than the Messiah, the prince, but the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. And its end will come with a flood. Even to the end, there will be war, desolations, and war, desolations are determined. And he, this prince who is to come, will make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. But in the middle of the week, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offering. And on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed. is poured out on the one who makes desolate. This is a very complex prophecy, but a profound prophecy. Daniel is saying, okay, God, I've read in the prophecies, and which means Daniel believed in the Word of God, trusted in the Word of God. I've read that it was 70 years. Starts praying, confessing the sin, asking God to take action, and he gets an answer. And he says there in verse, the answer is, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people and your holy city. The word decreed is pretty critical, because that word assumes a comprehensive plan, a plan of God. The word literally means to cut out. And it's as if you have the flow of history and God just cuts out this section and removes it and says through the angel Gabriel, I'm going to take this section of history and describe it for you. And it's the section where it is determined in this section how I'm going to deal with the people Israel and the holy city Jerusalem. And then he gives six things that are going to be accomplished. The first three are negative. The second three are positive. This is a special period, number one, cut out of time and eternity, in which God's going to deal with his people to accomplish his goals. And the first thing is he's going to finish the transgression. This literally means to restrain firmly transgression. He's going to bring sin under control. Is sin under control now? No. But the day's coming when it will be brought under control. And this is, it's sin in general. Sin runs rampant. Has no boundaries, but it's going to be restrained. It's going to be brought under divine control during this period of time that God describes. He's going to make an end. Secondly, he's going to make an end of sin. And he's going to bring it, he's going to make an end of sins in the specific realm. This is a reference to judgment. He's going to judge individuals for their sins, as well as bring sin in general under divine control. Thirdly, he's going to make atonement for iniquity. He's going to make reconciliation. He's going to cover iniquity. So these three have to do with evil, transgression, and iniquity. God's going to end all of that. He's going to bring it to its ending and get rid of sin. In other words, and all of this, we need to remember that all of this deals specifically with the nation of Israel. All these things were the things that brought Israel into this captivity to begin with. This was God's judgment on their rebellion. There's a second three purposes in this cutout period of history. One is to bring, he says, he's going to bring in everlasting righteousness. That's a positive thing. Having done away with sin, he's going to bring literally the righteousness of the ages. Eternal righteousness. Next, he's going to seal up vision and prophecy. He's going to bring an end to these prophecies, because there's not going to be any need for any more prophecy. Everything is going to have been fulfilled. And to anoint the most holy place. And I think this is specifically a reference to when all these things come to pass, the temple in Jerusalem is going to be rebuilt on the mountain of God. The sacrificial systems are going to have been reinstituted in Israel. The Jews are going to be offering sacrifices. And I think this is a reference to the temple in Jerusalem that will be the center of worship in the millennial kingdom. So these are the things that are going to come to pass. But when? Verse 25. So you are to know and discern that from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem. All right, when did this happen? Well, in the book of Ezra, there was a decree to go back and rebuild the temple. But the decree to go back and rebuild the city of Jerusalem didn't happen until Nehemiah. Nehemiah chapter 2. Remember, Nehemiah was the wine bearer to the king. He had a burden. Well, we probably don't have time to go back there if all I got is cover, but he had heard that the city was in ruins and it bothered him. So he went to the king and said, Let me go. This is Artaxerxes that made the decree. He said, and Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1 tells us even the date that this happened. It was in the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of Artaxerxes the king, is when this happened. And Artaxerxes, in response to Nehemiah's plea, issued a decree that the city of Jerusalem and the walls could be rebuilt. This happened, scholars tell us, and I'm telling you, I'm sharing stuff with you that's way beyond my capacity to have ever figured it out. I've just read and read and read and tried to capture the essence of all this stuff and summarize it in a way that hopefully it'll make sense to you. But here's where it gets kind of deep and complicated and complex, because we're calculating a specific amount of time that's referenced here. From the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem, this happened in March the 14th of 445 BC. That's what scholars have figured out. It's what historians have corroborated this date that this decree was issued. Thus began 70 weeks. All right? Back in verse 24, 70 weeks have been decreed for your people. When Daniel uses the word weeks here, he's not using the typical word for weeks or for days. It is clearly weeks of years. These are periods of 70 years. I'm sorry, of 7 years. There are 70 weeks of 70 years. 7 weeks of 70 years. 70 weeks. The weeks aren't weeks. The weeks are years. So you got 70 weeks of 7 years, which is how many years? 490 years. But this is broken down from the issuing of a decree to restore and rebuild Jerusalem until Messiah the Prince. There will be 7 weeks and 62 weeks. By the way, the reference to Messiah the Prince, what we are, the thing that we're trying to determine here is an exact amount of time between the issuing of the decree to rebuild Jerusalem and the day that Jesus rides into Jerusalem on the foal of a donkey as the prince, where he's proclaimed and hailed as the Prince of Peace.
Would that be the first advent?
Yes.
Okay, well,
well,
somebody's obviously...
There's...
I don't mean to throw you off on...
No, it's not going to be hard to throw me off on this one because this is complex, pretty difficult for me to grasp. But let me walk through it. We may answer that. This is broken down into 7 weeks and 62 weeks. Well, why would that be broken down like that? Well, 7 weeks times 7 years is how many years? 49. And it is 49 years from 49 years takes us up to 396 BC. And it was during that 49 years from the decree for 49 years. That's what it took to rebuild the city and its walls. And that's that also coincides with the end of the ministry of the prophet Malachi. So Malachi's prophecy was written, and what happens at the end of Malachi? The Old Testament canon is now closed. That happens in the first 7 weeks. Then there are 62 weeks from the command, 7 weeks and 62 weeks. That makes 483 years. We're still missing 7 years out of the 490. Well, here's something to consider, and we will answer. We are answering that, Don. These are not 365-day years. They're 360-day years. The ancient biblical writers calculated a year on a 360-day calendar rather than a 365-day year like the pagans. So we have in verse 25, 483 years of 360-day years unto the Messiah, the Prince. This is not Messiah the baby, not the child or the preacher, the one who dies and rises. It's the Prince, the anointed one, the royal one, the majestic one. And this is the Lord when he rides into the city of Jerusalem on the foal. So it's going to be 483 years of 360-day years. That happens to be 173,880 days. All right? Now I'm going to kind of read for a while because I'm not. Does the Bible have to be that specific? Could it be that specific if anybody else is writing it? Only God could author something that covers that long of a period of time that turns out to be that exact. Was it exact? Well, the decree began on March the 14th, 445 BC, and the triumphal entry of Jesus, in order for this to be accurate, must have occurred on April the 6th, 32 AD. A lot of factors go into that calculation. I don't want to confuse you. And I got to read a bunch of stuff to you that would just muddy the water. Let's leave it at that. There's been way more than two different scholars, but there are some people that move the date of the decree of Artaxerxes 1 year because of something, some kind of a year of succession or something. And if it, but the length of time turns out to be exactly the same, because based on that, that would move, it doesn't change the date that he came, but it would move the date forward a year, moves the date of the beginning forward a year. It doesn't change the number of days, it just changes the way that years are calculated. Sorry for confusing you. The point is simple. Jesus rode into the city of Jerusalem on the day, on 173,880 days after the decree to rebuild the city of Jerusalem. Daniel's prophecy is that accurate, that specific. And he's fulfilling what was spoken of hundreds of years before. Verse 26, then after the 62 weeks, the Messiah will be cut off. That means killed. And have nothing, which literally means no one. Isn't that what happened to him? Abandoned by all and killed. And the people of the prince who will come. By the way, this being cut off is not part of the 69 weeks. It's after the 69 weeks. Then what happens after the 69 weeks? Well, there's a gap in time. But at the end of this 483-year period, when Jesus died on the cross, this period of 69 weeks was over. It says after that, well, it says, and the people of the prince who is to come will destroy the city and the sanctuary. All right. This was fulfilled in the years following the death of Christ, when, as I understand it, in AD 70, the Romans under Titus Vespasian, the Roman general, sacked the city of Jerusalem, destroyed the city walls and the city completely. He attacked the city with what was at the Roman form of artillery, and smashed the walls, caught everybody that they could that was outside the city, and crucified as many as 500 Jews each day. There was literally a forest of crucified people all outside the cities. The historians tell us that there was an unbearable stench that hung over the countryside. 1 million people died. 100,000 bodies were thrown over with the rubble of the wall. The city was sealed off, and the people left inside were left to starve to the point that they ate their children. Josephus says that robbers ran through the streets stealing the clothes off of dead bodies. It was the city of Jerusalem was devastated. He was that the first fulfilling of that prince who would come. It was a flood of armies, not a literal flood, verse 26, but a flood of the Roman army that destroyed the city and brought about the war, the desolations that were decreed or determined, verse 26. That's the people of the prince that would come. They were the Romans. There will also be a prince that will rise out of the Roman Empire in the future, who will, just understand this as best we can. Daniel is seeing prophecies fulfilled, not, as we've always said about the prophets, not necessarily being able to see and determine that this event happens now, and the next event that they are seeing is happening hundreds of years or even thousands of years down the road. They're just seeing the high points. He did see that this was fulfilled in A.D. 70. What he was seeing, he didn't see it, but what he was seeing was fulfilled with the destruction of the city in A.D. 70. But it's also fulfilled in this time of the tribulation period that we're looking at, Jacob's trouble. And what we see here in Daniel's prophecy is that at the end time, there's going to be the revival of the Roman Confederacy. It's going to be formed of 10 horns, and earlier in the book of Daniel, this is the 10 nations of the reunified Roman Empire. And out of that, in the latter days, is going to rise the Antichrist, the prince. And he is going to, as described here in verse 27, make a firm covenant with the many for 1 week. This begins the 70th. This is again, not a week of days, but it's a week of years. This is the 70th week of Daniel. And he will make a covenant with the people of Israel because these prophecies pertain to the people of Israel. This is one of the reasons, one of the compelling arguments for the fact that the church isn't going to be around during this time. Because the beginning, all of these prophecies deal with the nation of Israel, and they continue to deal with the nation of Israel and not the church. But this leader will make a covenant. He will promise to protect the nation of Israel from all the world power, from the powers around it that are constantly attacking and trying to encroach upon its borders. He's going to allow them to rebuild their temple. He's going to allow them to have a restored worship. There's a tremendous desire for that among the people of Israel today. And I think this teaches us, or reveals to us, that under this prince that will come out of the revived Roman Empire will be one who will protect them, give them the right to rebuild that temple and start their sacrifices that they'll start and they as they revive their old form of worship. But in verse 27, in the middle of the week, at the 3.5 year period, he will put a stop to sacrifice and grain offerings, and on the wing of abominations will come one who makes desolate. He's going to put an end to that practice of their worships. In fact, it's called the abomination of desolation. It's believed that he will set himself up. He's presenting himself as a great world ruler anyway. He will present himself as God, demand that he alone be worshiped, put an end to the sacrifices to the true God, and he's going to bring about this, usher in the second half of the tribulation, which is going to be time of unparalleled devastation for the people of Israel like they've never seen before. That is what's called the time of Jacob's trouble, the time of great distress. He makes desolate. We will be reading more about this, understanding more about this as we move forward in the book of the Revelation. This is the abomination of desolation that Jesus refers to in Matthew chapter 24, where Jesus says in verse 15, "Therefore, when you see the abomination of desolation, which was spoken of through Daniel the prophet, standing in the holy place, let the reader understand. Then those who are in Judea must flee to the mountains. Whoever is on the housetop must not go down to get things out that are in the house. Whoever is in the field must not turn back to get his cloak. But woe to those who are pregnant and those who are nursing babes in those days. But pray that your flight will not be in the winter or on the Sabbath. For then there will be a great tribulation such as not occurred since the beginning of the world until now or ever will. So the latter half of the 7-year period is a Holocaust. It's all set in motion by the Antichrist, who kicks it off in violation of the Jewish worship in the temple. So this is an incredible prophecy. It takes us all the way to the end of the Old Testament canon, to the end of the 483 years when Messiah comes, and it takes us beyond that. Even the end of verse 27, or at the end of verse 27, even until a complete destruction, one that is decreed. Again, that word is determined. Till that is poured out on the one who makes desolate, till God completes what he promises back in the first verses that we read, to bring an end, to bring in everlasting righteousness and anoint the most holy place. We're going all the way. This prophecy goes all the way to the culmination of history, to the coming of Christ, the establishment of his kingdom, and the ushering in of the new heavens, the eternal heavens and earth. Daniel said, "Lord, show me when this is going to take place," and he got the answer. And we're in that gap. Right now we're living in the gap between the end of the 69th week and the beginning of the 70th week. Daniel didn't see that. This is the mystery of the church age that Paul speaks of in the New Testament. We're living in that time now when God is building a kingdom for the Lord Jesus Christ is building a kingdom from every nation and every tribe. And I just, if you want to know how reliable the prophecies are, you say, this sounds a little far-fetched. This sounds a little, first of all, it's difficult to grasp, isn't it? Really hard to understand. I think it gets easier going forward. Daniel, in chapter 10, is terrified by this vision that he sees. He comes to chapter 11, and he starts seeing more. And the events of chapter 11 of the book of Daniel are such a detailed description of the history of Israel from the time of Daniel to the time of the Messiah that critics, it's covering a long period of time, but it's such a detailed description that critics of the Bible say it could not have been written in the days of Daniel. It had to have been written afterwards. But it describes in detail. I haven't looked at it and studied it that close, but it really describes in such detail the events of world history that it leaves you saying, look, either it was written afterwards or somebody, whoever wrote it, whoever revealed it to Daniel, had to have been the one who was in control of what was going to happen. Those are the only two conclusions that you can draw. And which one do we know to be right? God was in control of what was going to happen. God knew what was going to happen because he knows the beginning from the end. So he's able to tell Daniel 400 years before this stuff takes place, exactly what's going to happen. I would commend to you, if you want some encouragement, go to John MacArthur's Grace to You website. He taught through the book of Daniel. I've been exercising and listening to a lot of this. But he's got two messages on Daniel chapter 11 that tells you, it goes through the detail with which these prophecies were fulfilled throughout history, the history of Israel. Now, what does that mean for us? If the things that, if ever since the beginning, God has been telling us what's going to happen, and it's been happening exactly as He said, so will the rest. We might struggle to figure out from where we are the details and the specifics, and we may not all agree on who's going to go through what, and who's going to get raptured out or not raptured out, and how much of the tribulation we're going to go through, but here's what we can know. We can know that when Jesus starts breaking the seals, those things that the book of Revelation are telling us are going to happen, they start happening. And they will not finish until God is finished with the unfolding of His plan for mankind, for the redemption of what rightly belongs to Him. I want to apologize for struggling with this. It's pretty complex and pretty challenging for me. That's kind of compounded by the week that we had with Donna's mom being in the hospital and a lot of things going on, but I'm not making excuses. It's just been an interesting week. So, and it's an interesting study. And maybe we will. Maybe after we finish the Revelation, maybe sometime down the road, we'll come back and walk through the book of Daniel in a lot more detail, because it is pretty, it's very amazing. Let me throw it open for any comments or questions or thoughts, observations, questions I may or may not be able to answer.